Hello and welcome to another What's Current podcast by Napier. And you're joined by me, Steve Humphries, Technical Commercial Manager, and my co-host Andy, Technical Commercial Engineer.
Hey, everybody.
Mouthful to get out. And also, we've got the wonderful Michael Stott. Michael, is it Mike or Michael? Which do you prefer?
We'll go with Mike.
Michael when he's naughty. So he's having a good time. And as you can gather from his top piece, renewables, we're going to be talking about all things renewables. We're going to be looking into panels. We're going to be looking into entering the industry and also a bit on batteries as well. So, Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Steve and Andy.
I'm glad we got you finally on. We've been talking about it for a while of shows now, and we've got you on. But a good place to start, Mike, is if we go for, tell us a little bit about your journey into where you are now with East Renewables and sort of how you got there.
Wow. So, yeah, it's been a long and very, but the long and short of it was I was a domestic electrician many years ago, left the industry. I kind of got bored with doing domestic works and quite lonely, really. I left the industry, went to work in an office job and was doing a lot of sort of marketing and things with people like Worcester Bosch and their installers.
So still in the industry a little bit.
Keeping sort of more on the plumbing side.
Technical advice you give giving?
Yeah, so it was more about their sort of branding and marketing and sort of getting their companies out there. So I sort of did that and building that relationship with Worcester Bosch and their heating installers. I was really, I want to get back on the tools. I was really.
You missed it.
Yeah. And solar was really taking my interest back then. So I was like, I think I want to get back on the tools. And if I'm going back on the tools, it's solar is where I want to be.
Yeah.
So, here I am, really.
And how long has it been set up now as East Renewables?
East Renewables was back in 2022. I was going to jump back on the tools. So, second half of 2022.
And you started literally just self-employed straight away, sort of?
I virtually woke up one morning and go, right, what am I going to do? it was a bit like that.
So did you have to, guess you had to do some retraining? Or how did you? Because it's obviously from, domestic sparky into solar, and obviously you've been off the tools for a little while. I'm not saying you've forgotten it all, but did you have to go, I need to retrain myself?
I'd always kept my hand in a little bit, but then I found myself back up here at Napier HQ. Some courses to get myself back up to speed.
Napier training.
best trainer. And that was kind of one of my first port calls was to sign back up. Join Napier and...
He met the Dave Curtis this morning, and I thought that's going to be a long chat.
Dave.
Those that don't know, Dave's one of our brilliant trainers. What he doesn't know about things is brilliant. He's so technically good. So Dave's a really good guy. Oh wow, it's great. And do you know what? I've had that thought myself sometimes. As mad as it sounds, I've gone at 52. Shall I? I just because everything excites me about the renewables industry, and that's where you were, wasn't it? You thought, this is where I want to be. And if you're geeky like we are, and I don't mind saying that because we are nerds of the industry that love talking about this stuff and could talk about it forever, you're actually out there installing, and that's a bit I miss.
Yes.
It would be I love what I do now. Yeah. But I actually miss that kind of just getting your hands on the bits of kit and making stuff off. The challenge of a job as well.
This is it. And everything moves so fast paced. What you install this week, well, in a few months' time, you'll be installing something else and you've got to learn that again.
And I suppose it's supporting a customer as well, giving them a product, isn't it? Because, they didn't have that. And then once it's fully functional and working correctly, I mean, they must be so happy.
Yeah. And when they see, they look at the app and they see, we're not pulling any power from the grid.
That's a bit ironic.
You're their best friend.
And then it gets a bit later in the year, is there any way we can get a few more panels on the roof? We look at the other roof. You could put some on the north roof now.
The technology's a lot better.
And the cost of putting the panels on it was never viable before, but now you can actually, and people like Sam at Oval have done some really good videos on the data and showing how
it used to say 10-15 years on the payback, didn't it? I think it's dramatically changed.
It's probably come under like a single figures now, probably, if you have a decent well-spec system that's suitable for the customer. We've been doing a lot of work, and we'll come on to this a little bit more in a minute, is when we've been doing presentations, and I know you've seen some of our stuff and our webinars and our technical articles, we're saying make sure you're fitting a product that's fit for purpose, because these pallet drop kind of one size fits all approach, they drive me absolutely crazy, where they'll fit 10 panels on your house and all the same size inverter, and they've not even been out to the property, had a look, done a survey, And they even spoke to the customer, are you home all day? Do you think this could be an advantage?
Yeah.
Let's have a look at your consumption.
Yeah. What, I mean, it just goes out. What the customer needs.
Yeah, yeah, it's important to build that around the customer. You can't just do it one size.
Yeah.
It's like when the double glazers used to come around. This was, we're going back to those. they can do that on price a lot cheaper than good, proper installers like you and Sam and Mark and all those kind of characters are pushing, look, do it properly. And you might pay a bit more. But your job is done properly.
It is, and it needs to last. You don't want to be ripping all
this. I always say that to the customer, if they're listening, that this is an asset to your house. So infrastructure is an asset that you need to maintain and look after, and that goes from the planning. Who you're going to get in, what equipment you're going to install as well. It's all prudent that you do your research and that. It's not down to the installer, because the installer can give you some bad advice as well, can't they? Give you good advice. But I think that for the homeowner, they need to look into the systems themselves and what equipment they can install.
Yeah. Do you think the homeowner might get more invested these days than they do, or they're not that bothered? Because I know when we used to do, like, you do your standard socket. I didn't work a lot in domestic, but standard sockets and lights. The saw switch, the saw socket, the saw light fit, and they went, oh, it works.
Yeah.
I think now more than ever, the brands are more important to the customers. They are doing the research. They're looking at YouTube and Facebook and places like that and deciding what kit they want, like, you know, it might be the SIG energy system at the moment. Systems. Customers are really, they're dictating what system you put in now, whereas before it was what did you have a good relationship with
a price point.
Now the customers are
so they're a bit more savvy on what they want.
Massively. Yeah. So, yeah, and things like Tesla as well. You know, if you were in that Tesla ecosystem, you might say, well, actually, I've got the Tesla car. I want the Tesla charger. I want the Tesla Powerwall. I want that full ecosystem in the same app. And we've done one just yesterday where we put the solar and battery in, and the customer had an EV charger, an older EV charger in this. She said, do you know why you're here? Would you mind putting the EV charger that matches that brand so it's all in the app?
I can understand it from a customer that probably doesn't know a lot about it. It would make sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All the same products, one app. Yeah. Job done, isn't it? Yeah. So it does make sense.
Yeah, you mentioned that SIG Energy one there, and I know that I've seen on LinkedIn and on social media that they seem to have got something right at the minute with their products. What's standing those out from a sort of what is it? What's the standout thing? Does it just work well? Is it a good system?
It's not only is it a good system, but they managed to get the size format of the battery stack right. So you in quite a compact area, you can get a lot of storage in that area. It's so easy to fit as well from the installer's point of view. They pretty much just stack. There's no sort of interconnecting cables between the batteries.
Just stack.
They
just
sit on top of each other.
Yeah, and you can go, I think it's up to 6 batteries high.
Which would be what's the kind of system?
That's about 48 kilowatt hours. It might be a bit more now, actually. Yeah. They've just increased the battery size.
It's a big old system.
Yeah. Good system, isn't it?
Yeah, and quite a compact space. I mean, that's... And also the app, and
they're quite light as well. Are they still quite heavy?
The batteries themselves, are, I think they're about 80 odd kilos, a battery unit. So they are quite heavy. But yeah, to be able to get it in that compact space, whereas if you remember, like, looking at some other systems where you've got battery there, cables between.
You need that space. Yeah.
So
and the application, the software, the functionality all works really well.
They've got some like really smart AI integrations that talk to like things like Octopus and look at your usage, look at the weather patterns that it decides to do what. You're going to have loads of solar today. We'll export that and you'll get a.
I think that AI is quite intelligent there, isn't it? It's kind of, that's the one that's coming forward.
Yeah. And with that one, correct me if I'm wrong, the inverter, it's all an all-in-one, isn't it? The inverters.
We call it an inverter, but
that's the brains of the operation.
It sits on top. That's right.
So I have seen it.
From a customer's price point of view, it's quite expensive in store for that kind of equipment? Or is
it's fairly reasonable, to be honest. Yeah, it's not a lot more than some of these other sort of what you'd spec as a lower end brand. They've really put that price point about.
You think about the choice on the market now. I remember going to Solar and Storage Live probably 4 or 5 years ago, the first time I went, and I did a presentation for a different employer at the time. And I remember just being mind blown by the amount of different inverters from all over the world, Europe, not many in the UK, to be fair.
Yeah.
The panels, and just thinking, this is nuts. Yeah. Because back in the day of the first sort of solar in this country, it was like you didn't have much choice. You know, you had your old, I can't remember the name of them now, you had them everywhere.
Well, like the Sunny Boys.
Sunny Boys, yeah. That was it. They were everywhere.
Yeah, and they were like weighing absolutely.
And then the red ones.
And then like it's like when we had EV charging and Rolex were the only players in the game. You had a Rolex or a Sunny Boy for these technologies. And now you just, whoa.
Yeah, you could just endless amount.
Customer's choice.
But this is what I was going about. You've got to research it, haven't you? Because there's so much choice that can be good and bad, can't it?
Yeah.
You know,
and if you were doing it, Mike, if it wasn't customer spec, do you work with a few brands that you just some you'd go with, there's some you wouldn't touch, kind of thing?
There's a few, and I mainly do it based on the support that they give me. Because when you've got an issue, if you can pick up the phone to like say Emirates or that, you know, Mark,
she's great,
and that, Alpha ESS, the guys there, absolutely brilliant. That dictates for me, because when a customer's got an issue, they want a fast response.
Of course.
If you've got to wait weeks for a ticket to come through.
Oh, ticket system.
Yeah.
It does make sense.
That's good for you as an installer, commissioner, maintenance, fault finding. But also, I didn't think about that. The customer going, there's a problem with this. Yeah, I can get that sorted straight away for you.
This is it. There's
nothing worse, is there?
Traditionally, electricians stuck to one brand for a consumer unit. I only fitted that brand, you know. Yeah. Well, no matter what, I'm just fitting that one. So it does make sense to stick to a couple of brands that you install because you know the product's good.
And you understand it. And it's important to have that training from the manufacturer and of the product. Because everything's got its own quirks.
Especially software.
So if you're fitting every single brand under the sun, you're going to spend so much time trying to learn that for one install, that you know you might not use that knowledge again. But then when a customer rings you in 6 months' time, it's dropped off the Wi-Fi. How do I reconnect it? Well, I can't remember actually.
What inverter is it? Hang on.
It is important to just stick with a few brands, but also you're dictated by what the customers are asking for.
Yeah.
So it may be that actually you got to align yourself with a few and those few, and potentially it's what's hot in the market.
You might be able to have the confidence to swing the customer the other
way. Well, I was going
say to them, look, I'd know about this brand, but you can have it, but these reasons I'd perhaps go with these. And just be honest with them, saying, look, it's not a money thing.
Yeah.
It's just, if we need support, we've got it, we've got it nailed.
Yeah.
So Michael, how did you find going from a general Sparky, as you said before, into the PV, renewable, battery technologies. How did you find that change? Because it can be quite daunting. We've talked about this before, haven't we, Steve?
And when I do a presentation at shows on PV, I always get a straw poll of hands at the beginning. Mm. You know, whoever's sat in front of you, 20 to 60, whatever people at Elex's, sometimes three. Because I know it's me presenting. Yeah,
normally I'm heckling.
Yeah, you're not going to be throwing tomatoes.
It's a graveyard shift.
And I always say to them, like, how many are in it? How many are thinking and how many are not?
Yeah.
And it is interesting because I think there's a you obviously come across as someone that weren't nervous. You were like excited, right? Yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it properly. Mm. But do you feel there is a nervousness in the industry about getting into it?
Yeah, because it's a big switch, isn't it?
Pun there, you didn't even realise.
It's always
puns. Yeah.
This is it. And if you're like we were saying earlier about if domestics is what you do and what you know and you've got that set of tools and you've got that set of customers and you do that day in, day out, to then go and do something different, it's a different set of tools, different set of knowledge. It's a bit of the unknown. I was really fortunate that I came across a lot of it on socials. So then I came across the likes of Sam at Oval, Mark at Prentice 1-to-1 Powersonic. And it made it really easy because then you get in conversations with them, you get on site with people like them that it becomes second nature almost.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to learn.
Takes the nervousness out.
This is it.
I mean, we've got that as a later question, but we might as well address it now.
Yeah, I was just going to say, a lot of when we've talked about people do their transition from that, the first job tends to be their own property.
I'll
ruin a family member's house. I understand that, because if you make a mistake there, at least it's like, you know, it's in house, so to speak. It's not going to damage your company name and so on and all that.
Yeah,
so
that's true. We do see that a lot.
Yeah, and that is a big thing, actually, because the roofing side for the solar side, you make electricians aren't
And scaffolders aren't somewhere in the middle.
And it's a completely different skill set.
We don't speak to other trades. We've never had this before, as sparkers. We normally tell them what to do. Sorry, members of the other trades. No, but you are right.
Yeah, and I mean, you could say, well, do you know what? I'll get a roofer in to do that side. But I still feel like you've got to understand that side, because you don't know what the roofer's doing. You don't know how far their knowledge goes.
Exactly.
So, you know, and ultimately, if it's your job, you're responsible for if those panels blow off the roof and the roofer's only put one screw in every so often.
Yeah.
So to be able to, even if you don't want to do the roof inside, to be able to understand that
is important. And,
Did you do any like kind of roofing courses separately, you know, to just understand a roof? Would you advise that, or have you something you thought about?
I was really lucky because I'd got friends in the industry. So I'd been on a lot of sites previously when I was, you know, doing the domestic work, that I'd end up on a roof with friends, you know, in the trade.
Doing other aspects.
So I was lucky to understand that and have that knowledge and expertise.
Yeah.
But I can see how it would be quite daunting to someone who's never done that.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the bit that scares them most, because if you think about like an American system, it's all, and we've become a bit like that in the UK. We've become very much plug and play and piecemeal, haven't we?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I remember days of like, let's talk about normal sparking, maybe in commercial industrial. And I've said to you before, Andy, that, oh, I only do the metal bashing. I'll do the trunking and the conduit. Yeah. Someone else wires.
I know how to wire.
I've seen I've seen the American, maybe sort of Mexican, South American kind of systems. Like, it's a panel team, and then it's like a wiring team, and then it's a connecting up team, where I think you've hit the nail on the head. In the UK, we're engineers. We want to know the whole aspect of everything. Multi-skilled, you might not do it. And I think there's a danger, and I have heard some companies that go, oh, yeah, we'll get the roofer to do the hooks, the rails, and maybe the panels. But that makes me nervous, because they're not going to know what you know.
Yeah.
So I think there's got to be that collaboration between trades. I mean, they've not run any of the DC cabling on the roof. The MC4s are all correct. I'd feel a nervousness.
I can understand maybe putting, like, getting the tolls removed for you where you need to go, maybe.
Yeah.
So give me a bit of support, because every roof is slightly different with the tiles, different brands of tiles.
Yeah. And you end up on a slate roof.
One likes slate. You have to look at
them. And this is it. And then what do you do? You've trashed someone's roof and you don't know what to do to put it back together.
So. I get that part. And, you know, and the felt, breaking into the felt, getting in there. So I can understand elements where you want that advice and support.
Have you come across, Mike, because it's a subject I'm really passionate about. And again, I'm not bigging myself up, but I did do an article on it for our magazine, and I think it ended up in Professional Electrician, about this very subject, because I don't think there's a great understanding amongst renewables installers, a lot of them, well, let's say some of them, and be generous, where they don't understand the amount of hooks required and do that proper calculation. I know there's great software out there, but I know, like on the solar course, for instance, they'll give you that pen and paper approach to go, let's give you the size of the roof, the amount of panels, right, what do you need for it, you know, and spit out a figure of maybe 28 hooks are needed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
once you've got the hooks in place and the right, I know sometimes that's governed by the roof and it's better to be over than under. But we hear these stories. Obviously, we know that those panels with wind lift are acting like an aeroplane, you know, as it takes off and it'll just, we've seen them, haven't we? Our assessment team have been out, we've been called out to things, and we've seen them come off roofs where they've either ballasted properly or the hooks haven't been there.
Mm.
And even if it doesn't come off, you imagine just that over time on that roof, just creating that. Listeners, go ahead, I'm putting this in my hand, creating a vibration of that roof. Just that structure's been damaged over time.
Totally.
You must have seen that yourself stuff you've looked at.
Yeah, January this year, I went with Dan to a job where he got the call to go and fix an install for an installer that gone bust. And these panels were literally flapping on.
Really?
It was a slate roof as well, and they just screwed through the slate. But they missed the rafters on half of these.
So there was no fixing at all.
Literally, this video.
So it's just the roof is a boring, not the joist that you might get into.
That's it. The homeowner, he couldn't even sit in his living room because these panels were bang. Bang.
Constantly.
Yeah. And you imagine in the Lake District, the wind.
Wind, yeah.
So I would say those panels were weeks away from flying off the roof, some of those.
Like I say, it worries me to death because if you haven't done a proper regulated qualification that explains this stuff, I mean, it's all right pumping stuff into software. And again, I'm not having a dig at software, it's useful, but I'd like to understand the software is only good as the information that goes into it.
Yeah, trust. So,
there's no harm in checking the software. Because everyone that's worked with AI, doesn't always get it right.
Yeah.
You've got to check it. If you use it, it's fine to do your research now, but
have a rule of checking it.
I'm going to go off on a tangent, Andy. Sorry. The tangent is, I'm seeing a lot now, and I know some installers, and I don't know if you've done it yourself, Mike, of installing these wall panels, and I'm not talking about balcony solar. I'm talking about these wall panels. And obviously, when I was doing some research for our publication and some articles, obviously the pressure coefficients on a building are very important, and we've got complex formulas to work all that out. But it's not the same as a roof. Yeah. With a central area and an edge area. When we're sticking them on a wall, I'm worried about now it's putting them to brick, and we're creating the same kind of movement.
Yeah, you're creating a lateral sort of.
I need to move more digging on it myself. But would it start bolting to walls?
I was going
to
say, would it be a different fixing that would be required? A larger fixing that we use to this
They're not quite heavy, are they, realistically? This is it. There are some kits out. I think there's a German manufacturer that makes a dedicated wall mat system, and it looks really sleek.
Yeah,
but I think you've raised a good point there. You know, what's the testing?
Mm.
Is there any differences? You know, like you say, if that wind's getting behind and pulling that panel, if the structure of the brick,
the orientation, which corner it's on, all of the house, the way the house is positioned, its orientation. Yeah. So all these things that pop into my head thinking, this is great if we can get more panels on and they're reasonable to do it.
Yeah.
But it also worries me to think, have I the integrity of structure of that building?
Yeah.
Are you complying with building regs? All that kind of thing comes into play, doesn't it? Yeah. So, sorry, I always have these.
No,
I've got you thinking that.
That's it. Yeah, you're sort of verging on having structural surveys and structural engineering reports to just to put a few panels on a wall.
What we got next, Andy?
Well, I was going to talk about G98 and G99. So again, for people looking to get into it, what are the common pitfalls or things, the do's and don'ts? Yeah. You know, because obviously we do hear rejection, so some top tips about how you manage that situation.
Well, I think one of the common pitfalls is people not knowing about the G99 process.
Yes, not that fine at all.
Yeah. I hear a lot of that. You know, especially from newer installers, and they go, I have to do what?
Yeah.
And so really it's, I don't know where the best education resource is for that. Maybe you've got something with NAPIT to actually go through a G99 process with an installer. Show them, maybe
it's not a bad
show. But it's on the solar courses, any solar course you do with NAPIT, you should probably go through all the process of it from recognition. But it does tell you what the G98 is and what the G99 notification is, what the difference between them.
This is it, and essentially, all you're doing is you're asking permission from the grid to connect that inverter. It's essentially like a generator, So there's some really good software out there now. There's ENA Connect Direct, which is online, which lets you do these notifications, and it makes it a lot simpler. It keeps it all in one place. So rather than doing paper forms and emails, you can actually do all that.
It was a bit clunky before, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, because you've got all these different DNOs across the country that work in different ways. Doing it online, they've sort of integrated that. So that, I think that's helped speed up the process, because it used to take quite a long time.
Yeah.
You know, not only waiting for them to come back to you. I mean, it can be, well, it's supposed to be maximum 45 days, but you can see it's
for a customer on a G99, that's a problem, isn't it? If it's going to be a lot more than 45 days.
Yeah, they're really excited and want their solar installed, and you turn around to them and say, we've got to wait for the grid. Well, how long is that going to be? I'm not as excited.
Cool them off a little bit.
What we hear a lot, and I had this installer, was it? I can't remember which show, but I had about two or three people come up to me and say that they'd had a lot of G99s. I can't remember where the geographical region was, but they'd had G99s refused.
It might have been in the north.
We're seeing a lot of that.
I won't name any.
Seeing that more and more common at the moment, where they're just saying no,
because
they can't accept.
The grid might not be able to handle all that coming back in.
I think as well, some of the DNOs were struggling with staff levels. Because there was
it might have been a resource problem.
But I think that's improving from what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
That has improved. But it's a case of really knowing what you need to submit, get all your paperwork in line so they don't have a reason to reject it based on the paperwork or delay it. So if you get everything sorted up front and get the process nailed, then that will quash a lot of the issues and the speed and delays.
Yeah.
I think so that's really worth tips in particular. Yeah, I think just find out.
Just notify in the first place.
Please
notify. Because you think about EV charges, supposed to be notified. Yeah. Any generation, notifiable. And the amount of people go, oh, I'm supposed to notify, mate. Yeah.
But this is what comes
you imagine
back.
On bigger systems as well.
Yeah. This comes back to training, though, doesn't it? If you do a proper course, this will all be explained to you that you have to notify.
Definitely. And I think G98, I mean, there's not many 3.68 inverters I install now, so I don't really get involved in the G98. You know, it's probably a bit antiquated now. Most inverters are probably 5 kilowatt plus.
G99 straight away.
Territory.
I'm going to say most people want that probably.
If you're combining a battery system and solar PV, you're way over that already.
You got an EV charger and all.
I was in a meeting recently where they were talking about obviously this transition to electrifying the homes and businesses in the UK. And, and they're saying they're getting more and more requests now from the DNOs and the energy suppliers for three-phase systems in domestic properties.
It makes sense, though.
It does, because you're going to increase that usage. They've got an EV charge. They've got both systems. We've got electric boilers and all kinds of heat pumps. That kind of thing.
Hot tubs, outbuildings.
That's not going to last on its own. 60-amp fuse is going to be
huge. Even the 80 or 100-amp, you could exceed that.
Yeah, so I think that does key in. I had a random one then pop into my head, but it's gone, so I'll go with what's on our piece of paper. So we talked about this a little bit, and you obviously do your own podcast, which we're going to come on as well, and we got it.
What's it called, Michael?
It's called Only Panels, which the name started as a bit of a joke.
And you co-host that with
Dan. From DMH Renewables.
I don't know Dan that well. I've seen him a few times, but I've not had an official beer with him.
Likewise. So look forward to that.
Yeah, it'd be good. It'd be good to have you on. But that came out by accident, really. That install that we had to rework in the Lake District and take all the panels off, and we sat down one evening and said, well, let's make a video on that. Mm. I think we did it as a live, actually. Mm. Let's talk about that install, because it was a horrendous install.
Yeah, good to show, though.
Yeah, and it was nice to... I always feel like I want to get this information out to people so they can do a better job.
Mm.
And so we did that live, and then me and Dan said, that was really good, actually. Enjoyed that. Should we do another one? Yeah, we'll do another one next week, shall we?
Yeah.
And it just rolled off.
I think Steve was touching on it. It's really good to see that in this renewable industry sector that more electricians share technical knowledge, experiences. It's more open than previously than what I've known it. What do you agree, Steve?
We talked a bit off camera before we hit the record button, and I said, before, electricians were very insular. They did their own little thing. Contractors were nervous of each other, winning their jobs off of each other. With renewables, and especially this new sort of solar coaster Orion and batteries, it's so open, and it seems like we're all trying to help each other. Yeah. I mean, the people you talked about, you're all basically working in the north.
Yeah.
Which is but there's enough out there for everyone.
It's a big enough area
and helping each other out on jobs. I love that. Yeah. I've seen you on videos with Sam, with Dan, vice versa. Yeah. And I think, the community spirit of renewables at the moment is just I'm sure there's ones that are out there just doing their own thing. But sharing on podcasts, sharing information, social media is so powerful as a tool now. I love what you just said there, Mike, I think it's important. You said it's important that I want to share that information to show the good from the bad and the indifference, and say, look, you'd admit yourself, we're not always going to get it right, but show it warts and all.
Yeah,
that's what I love about these guys.
I think when they do it, I don't think they like slag it off. Oh, look at this bad install. Look what they've done. It's not all like beating the drum like that. It's just like, oh, look what we've come across this. Yeah. Well, what can we do? This is what should have gone on.
This is what the standards say.
It's not slagging off the installer like previously, even though they've done it not right. It's about how can we put this right?
So, Mike, you've seen that, obviously, that collaboration. How have you found it helpful for you?
To be honest, coming back into the industry, I've built almost everything around that social and that interaction and getting on site with others and, welcoming other people on site. Even yesterday, there's a lad, Sam, who came with us, and he's a domestic electrician, but he's never done solar, but he came up and did the roof works match yesterday, and it was
just to gain that expanded experience.
I think that's
did he love it?
Yeah, absolutely loved it. He honestly shook me at the end of the day. So I'm absolutely buzzing. This is amazing. I can't wait for the next.
How great's that?
Yeah, because when you learn, you tried as electrician, you learn off the experienced electricians that taught you. Yeah. But if you're a sole trader and you're looking to go into that, who are you going to learn off?
Yeah.
So
and we need more of that.
Yeah, and we need, yeah. So it's really important that you do because work.
You may have gone, right, done your research, got a code of practice, bought a book, hopefully it has, and then gone on to do a course, a regulated course, and maybe some manufacturer training. But you talked, Andy, about the nervousness of the first job. You've got people like Mike, Mark, Sam, Dan.
I'm sure there's others out there.
Are willing to go. There's a guy down in Devon, give him a shout out. Stephen Humphreys.
I actually got to meet him at the Sarah's.
He's a nice great guy as well. So he's based in Devon, down by me. And, you know, he's always showing his stuff, warts and all, what's gone good, what's gone bad. And I think we need more of that because that will encourage people into this world, won't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And we need more people in the industry. You know, the people who are in it at the moment can't serve all the installs that need to happen. And the problem is if we don't have good people that want to do it right and know how to do it right or willing to learn to improve, we're going to end up with installers that are not experienced. Mm-hmm. And then, but like the solar coaster, they're just going to be thrown in to get the job done.
And this kind of effect on customers, wanting to, if customers have got a negative experience, they're going to share that.
Yeah.
And they might put other customers off actually going, I'll tell you what, I will go for that. Mm-hmm. But if a customer had a good experience, they're more likely to go, okay, and then actually I'll take that foot into it. Because the government and we all need to hit net zero, don't we? You keep on hearing it.
These targets aren't going anywhere. They've put their eggs in one basket, isn't
they? Yeah.
I mean, you think about now an electrician coming out of their time or in an apprenticeship. So excited. I say this all the time. I get excited about it. And I'm only talking but presenting and writing about it. I'm not installing it anymore. But I think, what an exciting time for our industry. I don't think we've had something. That's why you came back into it, really, if you think about it. I don't think we've had something where we've gone, oh, I'm a house basher. I get in people's lofts, I chase walls, and I've done this for the rest of my life, and you moan about going to work every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think that happens anymore. People go, I could do solar, I could do EV, I could do smart homes. And when the saturated market in domestic, I can do it commercially. I can do my first commercial job.
Yeah.
I might get involved in utility scale further down the line.
Yeah.
You just don't know where it's going to take
you.
You
might find you prefer that end of it.
Yeah.
The world's almost your oyster with that one. And it honestly so excites me still, you know, even a few years down the line, you know, I get in my van in the morning, right, where am I off to today? And it could be 100 miles, it could be, you know, do you know what I mean?
All over, work?
I could be up sort of Barnard Castle, down in Bournemouth, you know, the next week.
And so, I'm busy, work good.
The diary's filled up till the end of the year and even starting booking jobs in for early next year now.
That's great to hear, isn't it?
Yeah.
That Christmas period. I remember being self-employed. You wanted to get over the bump.
Do you have time off yourself? Because obviously you're working, you're doing your podcast. Do you give yourself a bit of a break? Like
all these characters are nuts.
Do you give a bit of time for yourself?
Yeah.
Yes and no. I mean, I was up till 2 o'clock this morning editing the latest episode of the podcast, which is going out tonight. You know, do you know what I mean? But you just take your moments and then, but you might finish your job a bit earlier than you expect.
And come and see us today.
It's the other side of the game though, isn't it? It's exciting, but you have got to put the work in if you really want to grow it. I'm going to say you've got to put it in, haven't you?
I raise a good point there, Andy. The social media side now and putting your work out there is a really brave thing to do, but it's an online portfolio. People see it. People go, actually, I want that guy to install my.
But that is definitely the upside of it. The downside of it, you might get some comments at some point. But you know, take those on the chin.
We get it.
You know, there might be something you can learn from it, or it might just be someone just wanting to give you a bit of hate. But take it on the chin, you know, and just move on.
There's more positive than negative.
I think so. You know, the people who are trusted people in this industry that have got your back, don't you? The ones that just want to have a little dig and a troll. I'm just like, well, carry on.
We've
agreed, haven't we? Anything we put out, really, we're going to do some more recording after this podcast, aren't we, for our socials? And we'll do some testing and different things down in the training centre. And when we put it out, we get it reviewed, we see it's okay, it gets edited, and we just let it go out. I think if you got too upset about it, you'd be like, oh, I'm never doing it again.
It goes back to the point, we're trying to help the industry.
Yes.
We're not trying to tell people.
Yeah.
We just want to help.
Yeah.
You know, good practices.
Yeah. And I think that's a good podcast, good webinars, anything you put out technically, if it's got the right heart and the right ethos to help people, you're doing it in the right spirit.
Yeah.
If it's, you know, obviously an organiser, we're all commercial. Yeah. You're a commercial entity. You need to make money, pay your bills. So are Napier. So me and Andy have got families and the rest of it. But actually, this comes from you. You're still passionate about the industry, aren't you?
Yeah, massively.
It sounds like when you went in that office job for a bit, it's like, oh. Mm.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah, this is it.
It was a little bit like your leg was twitching a little bit.
It was. It was like, oh, I just want to get my hands on the tools again. I just really want to get out there. I want to go and sit on a roof.
He says that, I want to go on a roof.
So looking ahead, what advancement are you most excited to trial use in the next 5 months? We've got so much technology evolving.
The advancements are mad,
aren't they? Crazy.
I mean, we've not long come back from Solar and Storage Live, and like you start to see some of the new kit that's appearing. And a lot of it looks very similar. So you've got to look a bit deeper than what's on the surface, and it's the niches like things like the AI sort of integration, things like that, that are going to improve the efficiencies. Mm. You know, so you might have battery storage, but actually the AI can then go, well, do you know, if we take power from the grid at this point, it's really cheap. You know, the solar will be low.
Mm.
And it's things like that. That advancement where it's going to save the customer more money in the bank, put that money back in the bank from the kit they've possibly already got, or just by adding a few things to that.
Mm.
That advancement, that's going to be really exciting. But yeah, the brands like SIG, Solax, Alpha ESS, they're really developing the product, as I think a lot of the brands are.
Yeah.
But it's going to be exciting time. So I think we're still very early on into this.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think the R&D behind the ones that have got good technical teams is going to be that. And, you know, we did a recent podcast with an EV manufacturer called CTEC, a lovely guy called Victor. And he was saying about, from his point of view, they're always future-proofing their kit for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. So to do with the communication, the cybersecurity, the way things talk to each other.
The back end.
That's possibly stuff that the installer or the customer doesn't necessarily consider. But that's actually where the really exciting and advancements will be. Because a battery is a battery, although I'll go on to it in a minute, the technology. But all that, how it functions in the background and then keeps working for years to come, that's, I think, where it really gets really exciting and the advancements happen. But also sodium technology in battery. That's going to really
battery chemistries is a big one.
Yeah. I mean, that's
We've been comfortable with lithium-ion for a long time now, haven't we?
Yeah. And sodium's an abundant...
Yeah.
It's sea salt, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, so that means batteries can possibly be made over here.
Yeah.
So there's less transportation costs. Yeah. There's more opportunity.
Mm. Well, for the British workers as well, isn't it? You know,
companies, you know, the British manufacturers, you know, there's people like obviously Doncaster Cables, which are a great cable manufacturer. It's My Energy, Give Energy. You know, I think it'll put a lot more opportunity back into those British manufacturers.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's important. You know, we're known for our industry, our engineering. And I think over the past few years, that's sort of gone by the wayside a little bit, and we've relied on cheap imports from certain parts of the world, which we won't mean to be politically correct, but we all know. And actually, it's like let's get back to doing what we did best. Yeah. We were the engineers.
There's no reason why we can't do it, is there?
Yeah, because we've got innovators, we've got people that are really good, and I love that about the battery chemistry. Because, you know, I remember the days of, again, going back to these sort of hospitals and schools that needed, you know, the UPS systems, it was full of lead acid batteries.
Yeah.
You know, they were in cool rooms with the air conditioning blowing on them, normally in a basement. You know, when they'd only last so long, you used to write the little...
And
then someone would come with a pallet truck and get rid of them.
Yeah.
But you think about the technologies now, and just a container drop, perhaps, scenario, at the back of a unit. Like, at Solar and Storage Live, they're nuts. They walk in those batteries, all air-cooled, and I'm like...
That's right, and they're just sort of lifted in one piece.
Yeah. It's all done there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you said, and the actual outage of it, they actually draw.
It's crazy. Yeah, you're getting hundreds of kilowatt hours in a little container. Yeah.
It's mad because, what we see now when we drive up and down the motorways, obviously on the bigger scale, is the solar farms.
Yeah.
It's not long now when you start to see those container drops of battery storage.
And
they're going to help stabilise, obviously, the grid. We know the grid's creaking. It's many, many years old. So for all those harmonics, fluctuations in frequency, balancing, those container drop kind of things are going to be crucial for moving forward for grid. I mean, they are updating the grid, and there's a lad I know works down in North Devon where I am, you know, works for National Grid, and he says you'd be surprised the work that's going on, especially with the older transformers that they're trying to get up to speed, excuse the pun again, but they are trying to obviously do things with them to make
them work. Stepping up?
Yeah. Oh, that's another podcast.
Yeah.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, how we keep up with all that infrastructure.
There's a lot going on. And I said this to someone the other day. I said, like I've just mentioned, it's such an exciting time to be involved in renewables. I mean, I'm just an absolute geek for it. But actually, we've got to have a little bit of caution about some of the stuff behind it that's causing us issues. You know, we've had a conversation about parasitic capacitors, PID, all these kind of things with cheap import stuff that people are installing that's not particularly safe, DC isolators, all that kind of conversation. And obviously, installers like you back us to the hilt when we produce such to go, no, we agree with this. I'm not putting that battery system, I'm not putting those batteries in a loft, and I never have and I never will, regardless of past 63-100. Yeah. I didn't do that in the first place.
This is it.
You know, and now we've got some common sense sort of a specification that tells us, don't do it. People are going, oh, why? My batteries are perfectly safe. And we're going, just think about it. Who wants? Yeah. I mean, I had a conversation with someone from Surrey Fire Brigade the other day, lovely, lovely bloke. And they go out and see this stuff in real terms. Their firefighters are going into these situations. And he said to me, he said, luckily, we've not had a UK fatality from a solar PV fire or a battery fire at the moment, but we've been close.
Really?
Yeah. And he says, and he thinks that because of the way that these solar PV fires and battery fires, in particular with lithium ion burn, he says he thinks it'll be a firefighter fatality.
Right. Yeah. I suppose it's a bit like, we had the premature collapse.
With entanglements,
Yeah.
He says, because they're the ones that are going to go after it. Even if the residents are out, he said they're the ones going into a building. And if they don't know about it, that where your labelling comes in, do you know there's an additional supply source of energy?
100 kilograms of batteries sat on some timbers that are just about to burn.
No one knows about it.
Well, firefighters, you know, first thought is to go in there, put the fire out, isn't it? You know,
rescue people and then put fire out.
Especially in domestic, he said, commercially, he said, we've got a lot of data on commercial and industrial buildings. And he said, we've got plans, blueprints, and we know.
Of course.
And they talked to us, said, but domestic, it's a whole new world.
Yeah, of course it will be.
You know what you're going into. And that sort of brings me on to another thing of sort of the education of it is thinking about beyond just the solar and the battery is the smoke alarms and the protection systems and things like that, you know, improving the knowledge around that. Because, if you put that system in and they haven't got smoke alarms or working smoke alarms, have you considered that when you've designed it?
Yeah, fire rating boards as well to fix it onto the equipment.
I mean, the big thing with the in-roof systems is we know now, I mean, it's dropped everyone, in it a little bit, is that the in-roof systems with they're not fire rating the panels anymore. Yeah, so and everyone's going, well, what do we do now? And no one knows. We're in limbo.
Yeah.
And everyone's sort of waiting for someone, whether it's MCS or some other HSC or whatever, someone to say, oh, actually, we've got a solution. Because we know on those GSE plastic
things,
there's been some,
You've
got rid of the roof.
Yeah.
And you put a bit of plastic behind it.
Yeah, I was actually talking to someone the other day, actually, when we were looking at these fireproof membrane, roofing membrane.
Yeah.
And it's a really heavy duty, it almost looks like a soldering mat. That's how I'd describe it.
Oh, okay.
It's a fireproof roofing membrane. So I think that's worth considering.
Yeah, especially I thought about the common sense in my head that would work along those lines.
Yeah. So
there's got to be a solution out there. We just need to someone say, that we'll go with that.
Again, I guess all these things have got to be certified to work with that. You know, the trays, the membrane and the panels have all got to be fire tested.
I think you're right, though. I think you've really nailed a good point there, because we think about, we can fit a system and know the crux of how to fit panels, rails, hooks. But do we know all those other bits that go with it? Like you say, fire detection, fire suppression, whatever it may be. You know, the is it Tiago systems that do the shutdown?
The optimizers.
Maybe fitting microinverters might be a better option.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, getting back to this guy in the fire, he was saying that, obviously we know the biggest cause. Everyone thinks it's a DC isolator, and it's not the poor DC isolator. It's actually
it's connections.
Because of those cheap imports.
Yeah.
You know, and we were talking earlier, and remember Stabili back in the day used to take out the kit to people that were installers. They used to give you the crimps, the tools, everything was free, and they'd show you how to use it. Yeah. They did training.
Yeah. Really
well. Oh, you don't get that anymore. No, yeah, they were so confident in there, because they didn't want people with a pair of pliers just crimping or not making off, stripping it right or whatever.
Yeah, it's quite scary, really, yeah. To think, you know.
So especially when I'm probably like 10, 15 years ago, when it first came out, because there wasn't much, like you said, there wasn't much training about.
People considered it, yeah.
No, you just sort of figured out as you went along, yeah. Really, especially the early solar farms, mm-hmm. All of all, 2012-ish, all around that. Yeah.
But it is, I mean, it's kind of concerning that obviously you can buy a lot of this sort of kit, like MC4 plugs on places like Amazon. You know, what quality are they?
Yeah. You can get a bag for like 10 quid or something, ridiculously 20.
Stuff like that, yeah. I'd never want to use them because, you know, that is the absolute critical point. I think I did a video on my Instagram a few months back where I showed disconnecting MC4s under load and they just
was an arc welder.
Yeah.
Don't do that at home.
Yeah, I wanted to show people that the dangers of, you know, those MC4s failing or disconnecting them under load, you know, but literally there's flames. As soon as you disconnect, there's flames.
So, yeah, there's so much more we could talk about as regards that, but I think we've sort of come to the end of our time. But Michael, that's been really, really cool. And I love your insight and your journey. It's been fantastic. And hopefully, the thing for me I'll get out of it is I hope it encourages more people that have maybe come off the tools, thinking of getting into solar, whatever. Just follow a similar journey. Get to know it.
I think there's some great advice. You know, like you say, reach out to people that are installing. You know, have a bit of social media research out there, local to you. Reach out to them. More than likely, they are going to say, come and do a day with me.
It's not
closed off as what it was before.
Definitely.
You've got your regulated training, but, you know, you've got people like yourself. You've got Mark Allison. He's got a new centre where he'll do practical things with you all day long.
And so I'll probably be up there doing some of these.
I need to get up there
and have a. But there's a lot more avenues.
A long way to go for me. Get into there.
Yeah.
I remember when I did one of his podcasts and I thought I was at the end of the earth when I come about over there. By the time I got there, I was like, that was in the old days before he had all these lovely plants and chairs around him, you know, sat in a cinema chair.
Okay.
What he's built up there, it's brilliant. No. So, yeah,
Michael, thank you so much for coming on and doing the podcast. Really appreciate your time. Andy,
I hope we enjoyed it. We definitely enjoyed it. Please subscribe, leave a review, and until next time, stay safe, stay grounded, and keep that current flowing.